When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You invite the enemy into our city.
I did. As a clever man once told me, we make peace with our enemies, not our friends.
I don't make peace with the Queen's enemies. I kill the Queen's enemies.
Yes, that's the military approach. How has that worked here in Marine? I represent the diplomatic approach.
Our Queen tried to make peace with the Masters, and they tried to murder her.
We enter these negotiations with open eyes. Trust me, my own recent experience with slavery has taught me the horrors of that institution.
How many days were you a slave?
Long enough to know.
Not long enough to understand.
Hey, Throners, welcome to our podcast. I'm Mr. Blog.
And I'm David.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 19. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about, what's this one called? Book of the Stranger, season 6, episode 4. David, so glad to have you on this week.
Thanks. It is a pleasure to be here. And we have a great episode to talk about with all kinds of interesting things, entertaining things going on. So I feel like I picked a good week to join you.
No, you really did. I got to say for episode 4, you know, and this, I've been saying that I think every episode this season, I keep finding myself surprised, like, holy crap, they're really going here already. You know, there's no like slow buildup. There doesn't seem to be anything dragging. Man, they are just moving this story along in such a, I don't know, pleasing way, I guess is.
Yeah, they've picked up the pace, no question about it. I felt like the first episode of the season was a little bit of a setup episode.
For sure.
With kind of reacquainting with everybody. But since then, it has been full speed ahead with plot events. Maybe some you could predict, but some have definitely been unexpected and all pretty entertaining.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. So, how have you been? I feel like it's been ages since I've seen you or chatted with you. And I've got to ask the one question I think a lot of people want to know. And for those of you who don't know, by the way, David is Karen's husband from The Walking Dead cast. Is Karen still not watching the show?
Well, that would be telling. No. And now that I say that, I'm going to tell. No, she's still watching Game of Thrones. As our listeners know, you know, she found some of the episodes and one in particular disturbing last year and hard to watch. And I think that's why she didn't want to go so in depth into commenting on it. And that's all I'll say for her. It's up to her to speak for herself. But she still has been keeping up with the events of the show. And I mean, it's so compelling. I think exactly. After you've invested all these years in it, it's hard to jump off 100%.
And it's, you know, totally understandable why she did bail. If I recall correctly, it was the burning of Shireen that was finally the last straw for her.
Yeah, and that was very upsetting. And I think now she can watch without the responsibility of having to comment on every detail. So if this show gets very violent and upsetting, as it does sometimes, she can turn that off a little bit.
Excellent. Well, that's an interesting segue, actually, to the first little bit of news that I want to bring up before we get started talking about this episode. For very different reasons, but next week will actually be my last episode as host of Game of Microphones. I am stepping down as host. I will be replaced by Jason. He's for the Walking Dead cast. This will be very good news for some people, I think, who really miss Jason's presence in the show. And I know he's been missing being on it as well. He's wanted to talk about it. Turns out, having a full-time job and recording and editing and producing two podcasts in a week, as well as taking classes in an acting school that I've been going to, in addition to really wanting to spend time with my wife and two kids that I absolutely adore and enjoy spending time with, has taken a bit of a toll on me. So in the effort to maintain my sanity and get enough sleep and all those kinds of things, I am stepping down as host. I want to just take this brief moment real quick to say thank you to everybody who has been really kind and generous with your praise and kind words over the last few weeks. It is very much appreciated. I will miss all of you. I'll miss doing this. But, you know, hopefully Jason will have me on as a guest co-host at some point or something along those lines. But, yeah, I'm having to pass that torch my way as well. So,
well, we are going to miss you, but I am sure that you have not made your last appearance on Game of Microphones. You're not like Gendry just rowing
never to be seen again. I hope not. I really hope not. Although that would probably be great for my arms and my back and everything rowing.
He's got to be in really good shape.
He's got to be in amazing. Where is Gendry? Totally. But with that out of the way, I just want to say thank you to all of you for listening over the last few weeks. I do hope to still be a part of it in some way or another down the road. I'll certainly probably still be making all the Facebook comments that I've been making. Because I do enjoy that. So enough about that. David, what do you say we go ahead and talk about this episode of Game of Thrones?
Let's do it.
Okay. So first of all, what is your general impression of this episode?
I loved it. I thought this was a great classic Game of Thrones episode. You know, there's always little things to pick at, and I'm a skeptical viewer. So, you know, there's one or two things maybe I'll bring up, but that was not my main reaction. I thought it moved like crazy. I thought we're seeing a lot of our favorite characters, and we're seeing developments happen in the plot that are interesting and that move the plot forward. And, really just, thought it was a terrific episode all the way around.
Indeed. And I would say the one thing, the overriding theme that I took away from this one, holy crap, man, women are really stepping up to the plate, and they're pretty much ready to upend the way everything is working in Westeros and Essos, and they're just like, nope, you guys have screwed this up. Let's get the ladies in charge. And I think it's been just phenomenal. I mean, all across the board, you have women taking charge, and I think it's just the coolest thing. I could not be happier, especially on a show that has had shall we say, less than a stellar record when it comes to how women have been treated on the show and in this world. It's a real pleasant surprise to see this turn of events finally really taking shape. And I think we saw that really beginning with the events of Dorne in the first episode of the season with the coup. For as mishandled as Dorne has been, that was pretty cool at least. So
yeah, I think you're exactly right. And it is great. And what kingdom could possibly be more screwed up than the king? The various kings have screwed up this kingdom.
Exactly.
So there's definitely room for some new leaders. And as you say, oftentimes in the history of this show, the women have taken roles or been given roles as victims.
Yeah.
Sansa, even Brienne, the most powerful woman you can imagine, thrown into a bear pit. Daenerys started out as a victim.
Yep.
And you're right, that really the worm has turned on that front in almost every storyline.
Exactly.
There's a strong female character taking charge, and it's changed the dynamic of the story.
Yeah, I mean, you even have, you know, Missandei in a way being able to stand up and kind of give a little attitude with Tyrion as well, like, you know, the slave comment about, you know, you not long enough to understand. Everybody's stepping up, and I just thought it was really great, really fantastic. But boy, let's get into our top fives. David, what is your number five?
So my number five is the climactic scene of this episode, the barbecue. and I can't take credit for that line. That was Jeremy Egner in the New York Times, but it was a good line, so I stole it.
That's great.
I'm not going to say I loved this scene so much for the writing and the surprise of it, because although it was a surprise, it's not a new development with Daenerys. We've seen her exhibit this superpower before, and they've sort of just recast it in a different light. But really just the emotional catharsis of that scene.
Yeah.
I mean, Dany's story had gotten frustrating and tedious, and she wasn't getting anywhere, and it just came, everything seemed to keep getting worse for her. And to see the old Daenerys come out and reassert her cleverness, her power, take control of the situation, and do it in such a spectacular way, it was just awesome. I enjoyed every minute of it.
See, what I really liked about it, and you mentioned that it was something that we've seen before with her, but what was really nice about it for me was that it felt like we haven't seen it in so long. This aspect of Dany has been absent for way too long. So when all this was going on in the temple and Moro was doing his thing, I'm just thinking, oh no, poor Dany, what is she going to do? Honestly, forgetting how powerful she really is, because I feel like she had almost forgotten how powerful she was due to the I don't know what you want to call it. I want to say malaise, but that's not quite the right word, but this sort of impasse that she was at in Meereen. I was dragging the whole story down on her end, you know. So this, honestly, it did come as a little bit of surprise for me. I did not know what was going to happen. In the moment she grabbed those, I can't remember, what are the large torch things called? I'm blanking out here. Well, whatever. When she grabbed it and before knocking it over.
What would you call that? I mean, it's not exactly a torch or a sconce, but it's somewhere in between.
There is a name for it, and I'm totally blanking out on. But what I really love, though, is when she did grab it, it was honestly this little, like, light bulb went off over my head. I'm like, oh, that's right. She's fireproof, man. This could get really cool. Did not expect it at all. And the way that it went down and the way it happened, I thought was, as you said, just spectacular. You know, it was really a quite a visual feast, to say the least.
Yeah, and you could see that it scared the crap out of the Call and his guys, just that she grabbed that thing and wasn't getting burned. And they were sitting there thinking, what the heck is going on here? But you also remember that the Dothraki, as powerful as they are, they're powerful really just through simple strength and numbers and ferocity. It's not a culture as much of strategic thinking the way some of the other cities are in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Daenerys started talking and launched into that speech, you remembered how not only powerful she is, she understands that
she's
culture.
She's cunning,
but she's also cunning and strategic.
Yeah, that was actually very much my number one. Partially because I feel like we have been waiting so long for Dany to kind of step up and do something again, that it was just sheer joy for me to see that just happen. I was just blown away. Thought it was just great. And I did love the role that Jorah and Daario played in this whole thing. I didn't really like, I thought it was a little weird that the beginning when we do see Daario and Jorah at the beginning, I don't know what kind of weird pissing contest it was that they were having about Dany's affections, you know, and when Daario's giving him a hard time, but you're just some old man, you know. That was,
and they've always been rivals to some degree.
Yeah, I would have kind of thought at this point in their little journey they'd be beyond that at this point, but such is life. But I did like the way in the end there how they worked together with Dany to make this happen. I just thought that was spectacular. I really did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, my number five, the return of Peter Baelish. He has been so conspicuously absent for the longest time, and it's really wonderful to see him show up. And you know those wheels in his head are always turning, and you're always wondering what kind of game he's playing. And although it was a relatively short scene, I thought it was great to get us caught up with Lord Robin there, and just how. How do I put that? How pathetic that kid still is. I love that the first thing we see of him is not even able to get his arrow anywhere close to the target. And it just, boop, you know, very, very limply falls to the ground.
Right. His voice deepened a little bit, at least. He's got that going for him.
Yeah, his voice did deepen. And then just, you know, the little showdown with Lord Royce there and being reminded again of Lord Baelish's ability to manipulate the weaker minds, if you will, and what he did by using Robin and, you know, shall we throw him through the moon door? It just killed me. But ultimately his plan is to go and take back Winterfell with the help of the Army of the Vale. And oh my God, there's going to be one hell of a convergence happening at Winterfell. And I really cannot. I mean, that's going to have to be episode 9 this season.
It's going to have to be. I mean, they're totally building up to it. So I'll chime in and say I had Littlefinger on my list as well. So we can talk about it now and skip over it when we get there. But yeah. I totally agree with you. His scheming was a huge part of this entire story. And then he basically disappeared for the better part of a season.
Mm-hmm.
And his reasons for marrying off Sansa are questionable. So all of his strategy up until then was very effective. And that has turned out to be arguably ineffective. So I think he's in a weaker position now than he was at one time. But this episode, as you say, reminds us of his ability to, as you say, influence the weaker minds. And I love the Lord Royce is sort of a blowhard.
Yeah.
And he is just no match for Littlefinger. I mean, that was over quickly.
It was over very quickly.
Yeah. So, by the way, you brought up the arrow.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of one of my favorite scenes in the entire history of Game of Thrones, which was when Edmure Tully was trying to set the boat on fire.
Oh, God, yes. Did they cover that on the TV show, or was that just in the book?
Oh, no, that was in the
TV show. That was in the TV show. Yeah, That's right. Yeah.
Hilarious. But, yes, so that's a theme they've returned to a couple
of times. I do remember. Who was it that did finally set the boat aflame?
It was the Blackfish.
It was the Blackfish. Okay, that's right. Yeah, that and I remember even reading that was one of my favorite moments. That was just it's so funny. And you know, what a great, again, highlighting this episode about, boy, there are so many guys, so many men in this world who, although they may have a high status for one reason or another, being able doesn't seem to really be part of the equation sometimes.
No, you're right. I mean, it's hereditary and inherited titles, and some of the families seem to be more competent than others. And then within the family, some of the people seem to be more competent than others. And certainly the young lord that Littlefinger is manipulating seems to be a poke at some of those hereditary factors. But also then think we were talking about some of the strong female characters getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
The hereditary nature of these families also leans towards the men. So sometimes you're cutting out some of the more competent or smarter members of the family just because they were female.
Absolutely.
So you're really winnowing down your chances of having, a strong hand on the tiller.
Yeah. And, you know, probably the strongest, shall we say, female hand that's always kind of been there on a tiller has always been the Queen of Thorns, Lady Olenna. And this episode showed her shrewdness yet again, you know?
Yes, although she's had her weaknesses, too, because her daughter is in the clutches of the Sparrows, and so far she hasn't been able to do anything about it.
Granddaughter, right?
Correct.
Yeah. What is your number 4?
My number 4 is Cersei and Jaime's plan to let the Tyrell troops in to the city to take on the Sparrows. Perfect. Basically, their whole plan to get some action going and take on the Sparrows. And like several things in this episode, the reason this is one of my favorite things is just what it promises for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, no doubt you figure they're planning some double cross we haven't heard about yet. Right. Their plan is not going to be Cersei's plan is not going to be as simple as let's go rescue Marjorie, who she doesn't even like.
No. And it was also very interesting that Kevin made a big point of saying, whoa, 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 we can't commit any of our troops. I promised. And Cersei was very quick to say, oh, but you didn't promise not to stand down.
Right.
You know, basically keeping the Lannisters out of it, but using the Tyrells.
Right, so that makes you wonder what are the Lannister troops going to be used for, mm-hmm. and it's certainly probably going to be something that's not nice for the other people in that room. It made me wonder if they're trying to get their hands on the Tyrell loot, which, if you remember, the Bank of Braavos is still lurking out there.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Wanting to be repaid, and the Lannisters don't have the money to do it. So I wonder if that's going to come into that.
Now, Cersei made a comment, sorry, to Lady Olenna about that they have the Tyrells have the second largest army in Westeros. Do the Lannisters have the first? That would be the king. I mean, yeah, the Baratheon.
Yeah, so I took that to mean that they have the second largest army, and the largest army is supposed to sit this one out.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It is how I understood that. But if so, that makes you say, well, what's that army going to be used for? They're not just going to end up sitting around. And the other part of this I loved is that for all their scheming, we know that Cersei and Jaime do not have the strategic acumen of Tywin or Tyrion. So they have this whole complicated scheme, and you can envision the whole thing going horribly wrong, as many of Cersei's plans do.
Mm-hmm.
They've underestimated the Sparrows all the way through. All of them have. You can envision some good stuff's going to happen down the line, and Mountainstein's probably going to be involved, and it's all going to be great.
Mountainstein, I like that. Gregor Stein, yeah.
Yes.
Well, actually, my number four was also the Small Council and the decision to take on the Faith Militant. I just enjoyed that entire exchange. And I really felt that the whole power balance between the two families, how it starts off with Lady Olenna basically making it clear, you are not welcome here. And then it was really the moment that Cersei said, well, you know, Margaery's going to take her walk of shame, that the entire tone shifted. And, you know, say what you will about Cersei, she still knows how to get things done.
She does, and we don't know that, by the way, to be true. We don't hear what Tommen actually said to her.
No.
So it could be that that is what he said to her, or it could be that she is planning that story to manipulate the Tyrells. We're not sure.
Well, that would not be a surprise. Right. All right. What is your number three?
My number three is characters coming together again.
Nice.
And we went through a long couple of years. It's sort of legendary in the show that Starks never get to have a reunion, and in this episode, they finally do.
The first.
And I think Sansa and Jon Snow coming together was emotional for everybody that's invested in this show. But not just them. I mean, Daenerys and Jorah and Dario, Jon Snow and Sansa are together. Brienne coming back into contact with the Baratheon family.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie and Loras back together. Yeah. Theon and his sister back together. Good stuff happens when the main characters are coming into contact with each other. So I think that promises interesting developments to come.
And in each of those examples, or at least most of, or some of them, in keeping with the theme of this episode, it was the women who held the upper hand. I mean, even with Sansa and Jon was ready to say, like, no, I'm done. I've been fighting. I'm tired. I just want to go somewhere warm. And it's Sansa that's really pushing him to, no, we're going to take back Winterfell. We're going home. Yara and Theon. Yara is like, no, screw you. You came back here just for the king's moot. And he's like, no. I'll support you. I'm subservient to you in this one, and that was a really sweet little thing there as well.
Yes, and I mean, Daenerys definitely has the upper hand over her two ongoing suitors.
Yep.
Cersei absolutely is running the show with Jaime, as she always does.
Yep.
Margaery is the one holding it together for Loras.
And I love that. Loras is completely losing his will for everything, and it's Margaery saying, no, you have to be strong, don't give in to them, don't give
them. So you're absolutely right, it's the female character in these scenarios that's sort of holding it all together.
It's such a wonderful little twist of everything on this, and it it warms the cockles of my heart to think that this is the direction that the story is taking. I have very often said what an extraordinarily hateful and nasty show and book this really is, that it's nice to get a little glint and glimmer of a honey coating on things. It's like, okay, good. They're doing something decent here. And that makes me really, really happy. Couldn't be more thrilled with that. So, great number three. You're right. It is characters coming together. And, I really hope some good just comes out of all this. Even as I mentioned before, I mean, in a way, Peter Baelish coming together with the Veil, and if that were a character, but at least little Lord Aaron. Oh, that kid. I did like that. That Falcon was fantastic, though.
Yes. Now, that's a great birthday present.
And isn't isn't a Falcon the sigil of House Aaron?
The Eyrie. I believe you are correct.
It's been a while since I've read the books. My brain is so hazy on all these little the details on these things. My number three, Brienne confronting Davos and Melisandre. That one brief little scene, I thought, again, another woman just being an absolute badass and just going up to these two people and saying, no, we've met before. I was part of Renly's Kingsguard, and he was killed by blood magic. And she looks right at Melisandre, like she knows exactly who both of these people are. And Davos tries to say something along, oh, that was in the past, we can move on. She's like, no, I don't forget. You know, yeah, it was in the past, but I don't forget. I loved it. I thought that was just a phenomenal exchange. I mean, and even beginning the moment they open the gate at Castle Black and you see Brienne and Sansa, it was just such a emotional moment, not just for the Sansa thing, but I do have an absolute love for Brienne, and knowing that she is fulfilling that oath that she made to Catelyn so long ago by bringing Sansa somewhere safe. Maybe I should make that with air quotes, safe. I don't know. But everything with Brienne in this episode just made me so utterly happy. And to see Tormund making eyes at her was the icing on the cake. Those two, they need to be a couple. I am now 100% behind the Brienne and Tormund relationship. Just perfect. Perfect.
That would be a power couple, to be sure.
Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? I mean, we've missed out on so many wonderful stories of Tormund Giantsbane that they did not include in the show. And my favorite story, of course, being the night he spent with a bear. And then it makes me think about Brienne having fought a bear. And I'm thinking these two are perfectly matched for one another.
Yep. And the bear and the maiden fair.
The bear and the maiden fair. It just needs to happen.
So. One thing that was a little painful about that scene, to me, I thought it was a great scene. And it's interesting to see Melisandre. She was so arrogant for so long. And even though she's brought Jon Snow back to life, she does not have her mojo back.
Nope.
But one thing that was a little painful is, as the viewer, as the observer of the story from outside, I think we all see Brienne and the Onion Knight as two of the purest hearted, most good characters in the story.
Yeah.
And to see them, Davos and Brienne, on opposite sides of this thing between them was a little painful, because you really want them to be able to get along and work together.
Well, now here's an interesting, and this scene brought up one thing that I didn't quite realize until I was watching this and it dawned on me. So, okay, we've been almost, I don't want to say enjoying, but there's been a certain enjoyment in the notion of Davos and Melisandre finally working together instead of having a contentious relationship. But all of that is predicated on the fact that Davos still does not really understand what happened with Shireen.
And that and they did put some foreshadowing in on that point.
They put some foreshadowing on that point. And I noticed that, and I'm just like, oh, this could get really ugly once Davos realizes what really went down with that. And in a way, I think we all kind of forgot that he was sent off and did not know what was going on. So I could see some hope potentially for a Davos Brienne joining forces at some point once he maybe finds out what Melisandre did.
Right. He was never in favor of what she was doing back in the day. He did not approve of it.
No. I mean, he didn't believe it at first. He certainly became a believer once he saw the shadow baby born. But it was the two of them who are completely responsible for the death of Renly. And it was an interesting reminder to have that pop up again. But that was the case. And that's interesting. I'm still eager to see how that's going to play itself out. But that's my number three, Brienne confronting them. And, of course, her flirtation, or Tormund's flirtation with her. I don't even know if you can call it that. I think it was more just Tormund looking on with loving eyes and going, that's my woman. You know, that was just wonderful.
Yes, it was a look that was easy to read.
Oh, and the fact that Dolores Ebb gave that sort of like, he noticed it and just gave that sort of smirk. That is a reminder of how much humor does lie behind Dolores Ebb.
Yes. Know?
And it's like, oh, good. Maybe he can bring something fun to Castle Black again. Now that the moody and brooding Jon Snow will no longer be Lord Commander. And I had to adore Jon Snow actually bringing up the fact when he and Sansa were chatting about how they were as kids. And John saying, oh, I was always just mopey or wandering around and, you know, but and she was adorable and saying that she, you know, she was kind of horrible to him as well. So judgmental and mean.
Well, and somebody brought up a good point about this, which was that, Sansa was close to her mom.
Yes.
Or at least followed in the footsteps of her mom, and her mom did not like Jon Snow.
And very, very good point.
Didn't want him around. So maybe some of that was back of them not being the best of friends when they were kids.
Well, and the AV Club brought up an interesting point. That was one thing I did read today was their review of the show. And they bring up an interesting point that it's great that it's these two that are joining up because these are the two that were never very close at all, you know. And John was closest, of course, with Rob, who's dead now, but second in that would have been Arya that he was very close with. And really, it would have probably been Arya that Sansa was the closest with as well. So the fact that the two who were not very loving in any sort of sibling sort of way are the ones who came together is interesting and at the same time does not detract in any way, shape, or form from the impact of two Starks finally coming together again. You know, they are different people now. They are very, very different people, both of them.
And they've been through quite a lot.
But yeah.
I was thinking last night, boy, Sansa's really been through a lot since she's seen another Stark, or certainly seen Jon Snow and all the stuff that happened at King's Landing and her father being killed and the way she was treated by Ramsay. And so I was thinking, yeah, she's really probably gone through more than Jon Snow. And then I said, wait a minute, he was actually killed.
Not only was he killed, he's waged war against the White Walkers. He's gone on. He went to become a spy for the Night's Watch, and becoming
killed
a wild
friends, killed his enemies.
He actually fell in love and had to watch his lover A, try to kill him, and then B, get killed right in front of him.
Right.
I think it's fair to say
it's pretty even.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's fair to say both of them have been through some monumentally life changing events that makes them extraordinarily different than the kids they were when the story started.
Absolutely.
And when they last saw each other. And I'm a bit of a nostalgic person myself, so it was really rewarding for me to hear the two of them have that conversation about, boy, I wish we had just never left for King's Landing. You know, if we could just go back to that day and you think about, I mean, it's so amazing to me to think when we go back six seasons to the beginning of this, that it was the death of Jon Arryn and Robert coming to Ned to ask him to be the Hand of the King that started off all of this.
Yes, and really with Littlefinger behind it.
With Littlefinger behind it completely, yes.
Yeah.
Sure, you had the stuff with Dany that was a separate sort of thing going on, but even that had Varys behind it. So between the spider and the Littlefinger, boy, a lot of manipulation has happened, and look at the fallout from all of it. It's spectacular. Yes. And I love having these moments of being able to reflect on the past when you have these two characters finally come together.
Yes.
Just so great. What was your number two?
So my number two was Littlefinger, whom we already talked about. So let's go on to yours.
My number two is Sansa and Jon's reunion, which I think we've already talked about. What is your number one?
On to number one. My number one, and I really, really love this, was Ramsay's letter.
Oh, excellent. The pink letter, yes.
The letter was so well written. I mean, you could hear him saying it. I mean, you could hear Ramsay Bolton saying those things. And so as barbaric and chilling as the letter was, Ramsay's also fairly cunning.
He's not dumb.
Right. And I was thinking the whole time that this letter is strategic, too. You get the sense that he wants to draw in Jon Snow.
Yes.
Draw in Sansa, maybe while he has the advantage, before they're very powerful, before they have a chance to possibly rally other northern families to their cause.
Well, because
questionable.
Yeah, well, and of course Ramsay is under the belief that, of course, that he has the Umbers as well as the Karstarks. So yeah, he definitely already feels that he has the upper hand for sure.
Right. And but it all promises a return to the chess match and the combat that characterized the early series. I think when Rob was running the show for the Starks, you have a commander of that caliber. If he can be motivated and get back on his game, you have a commander of that caliber in Jon Snow. And a crafty and savage opponent in Ramsay Bolton. Mm. So I thought he was prodding them. He was trying to prod a response. And it seemed, at least on Sansa, to work to some degree. So I really loved that.
Oh, it was, yeah, I couldn't agree more. What's also wonderful about this, and lest we forget, you know, it was Ramsay's really underhanded way of fighting that took out Stannis's army as well. You know, he has experience in this, and it's easy to want to belittle or minimize somebody like Ramsay Snow, and now he's Ramsay Bolton, excuse me, into thinking that just because he's evil, he's not intelligent. He is.
Well, his father belittled him and said, if the only strategic thinking you can do is to act like a mad dog, you're going to be treated like a mad dog. But then Ramsay very quickly outmaneuvered him.
Yeah.
So there obviously is, yes, there is savagery in him without a doubt. But I think he's shown that there's a little more going on there, and we don't know yet how effective a commander he's really going to be against a capable opponent, but we'll have to see.
And let's go ahead and add a front on the south that's going to be coming up from the Vale.
Yes, that's
which
true.
He does not know about, and that could certainly play one hell of an interesting factor in this battle. And once I started thinking about this with coming down from the north, with Jon and the Wildlings and any other northern houses that they can get to their cause, and then coming from the south to get the Vale, it reminded me in a very visual way of, I believe it was it Stannis's victory at one point when they did that pincher move.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like, but in a much larger scale. That there's this pincher move that's going to happen on Winterfell.
Yeah, one thing I don't have a great sense for, and I think the show has been a little vague on both of these points, is exactly what kind of shape Winterfell is in. Because it was in ruins at one point. Now, the Boltons have been there for a while, and obviously they've done some rebuilding. But I don't get the sense that they've rebuilt Winterfell itself into back all the way into what it was. And then it's also hard to get a sense for what the size of these other forces are. I mean, so Tormund said, I have about 2,000 that can fight. We don't know what the actual the Night's Watch is going to do, whether they're going to be involved, and they're certainly not.
I don't think they will get involved. That's kind of part of the whole Night's Watch thing, right?
And then you have, it's not clear how strong a force the Vale is.
But Sansa said that it was she overheard Ramsay say 5,000 troops, but that was before the battle with Stannis. So they may be thinned out as well.
Right. And he also could have been messing with her. I mean, who knows what she really overheard and whether that's true. And
So it's
all a little murky.
And I'm beginning to think if we go back to that, I think there was an issue that Roos had with the fact that they maybe didn't have the numbers at that point, which is why Ramsay did the kind of midnight run, you know, a little guerrilla warfare.
Right. So, he proposed going to do that with a few hundred men.
Yeah.
A small mobile force,
which obviously was extraordinarily effective, and if he puts that into play as well, but he's not fighting on two fronts, and he will eventually be fighting on two fronts if that's the case. So all I gotta say is we're talking potential right now, and I'm really excited for the potential of how this is gonna boil down. But that letter was great, and I did love the way John could not finish it, and it was the person with the bigger balls who was able to actually finish and read the rest of that letter. And of course that was Sansa. And the rest of that was absolutely brutal, but it was so Ramsay Snow again, sorry, Ramsay Bolton.
Okay.
That was very, great. Very effective and frightening and just, ugh, that guy. It's, I find it interesting all over the internet. People are surprised that there, we actually have somebody we genuinely hate more than Joffrey. You know, Joffrey was a loose cannon, but this guy, oof, there's something worse.
I don't know, man. I hated Joffrey worse. There was just something about him that bugged me. I mean, Ramsay, I would say, is more violent. And maybe he's more evil or less. I don't know. He's a little simpler. But I don't know. I almost respect his simple savagery. But Joffrey was just a little worm.
Oh, that he was. I mean, and I don't think it hurts that Joffrey was also the product of incest.
Which, you know why I hated Joffrey more? It's coming to me now. It's because he was privileged. He was a child of privilege.
Oh, okay.
It was all handed to him. Ramsay is brutal, but at least he took it for himself.
You got to respect that, don't you? Yeah.
You got to respect it.
No, I can see that. I can see that. But I'm looking forward to the very many ways we can think of to see Ramsay die. So,
well, one hopes that dogs may be involved.
Ooh, I like it. Absolutely. My number one was Dany's fiery reintroduction to the Dothraki. We've already covered that. Do you have any notes you wanted to bring up? Something that we didn't talk about?
I had a couple just little notes. One thing I did not like in this episode was the Jon Snow. And this dates back to the last episode. I thought it was kind of a cheap trick. So it made a great episode ender when he strode out of the castle saying, "My watch is ended."
But then he's suddenly there at Castle Black.
Yeah. And you feel like, okay, he's not coming back. And then all of a sudden the next episode, "Oh, I forgot to pack my suitcase," is essentially what he was doing there.
Yeah,
that was all contrived so he could meet Sansa. And I just thought it was a little contrived. They sort of went for the slick ending of the last episode, but then they had to do a cheap trick. Hey, presto, he's back. That was okay. One thing. Go ahead.
No. I'm digging it. And I agree. It was kind of funny. And I noticed that when we started watching this one, he made this big grand exit and you're just like, you didn't think that through very well, did you? You even took off your cloak and you're ready to go out into the snow. Now you got to go back and get a jacket. Come on. What are you doing, man?
It was a little silly. I was interested to see that Jorah's grayscale seems to be progressing pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does.
So I'm hoping we get to see him as a stone man before that's all over.
Oh.
A little sad, but admitted it would be compelling. I'm not in particularly enjoying the Ironborn story. I feel like they ignored that story for a long time.
Oh, they did.
And now all of a sudden they've jumped into who's going to rule the Iron Islands. And it's sort of out of nowhere. And I kind of feel like I don't care. Like it's the new Marine.
I do really wish that they would have addressed this and dealt with this a lot sooner in the show so that we had not forgotten about the Greyjoys. I don't know. There's part of me that wants to say, a misstep on the part of the show.
It's just all thin. I mean, this all of a sudden the king's brother showed up and we don't even know. And the king's mood all of a sudden, it's just all a little thin. They didn't lay a lot of groundwork for that.
Agreed. And I think that is, I don't know. I hope they can redeem that somehow because I am a fan of the Greyjoys in the story. And I would like to see that happen, but we are missing even some characters with that and some of the back story. So we'll see how that plays out. One thing that we did not talk about and I wanted to bring up, the death of Osha.
Yes, and that was a pretty big deal in the show, and you're right. We have not
It was a pretty big deal in the show, and it also felt shoehorned in.
I was a little surprised that he would kill her that fast, because he even went into the thing about she's a good talker. And she actually, you know, if he would have done his thing, I think had some other interesting things to tell them about what's been going on with Bran and what have you. She knows she was with Bran the whole time, but she knows a little bit more than it seems like Ramsay does.
It just, I don't, something about the way that scene played out, it was annoying me the entire time. I don't know. I haven't been able to put my finger on it all day, to tell you the truth. But it's kind of bothered me the way that she was cocking her head. And I think she was trying to be sexy or coquettish to try to lull him into that moment. But it felt forced. It felt a little too forced. She is what I always felt, far too strong of a character to have been duped that easily. Something about it felt off.
Yeah, I actually didn't read it that she was duped. I felt like she knew she was going to get it, and she decided to make one desperate move and at least, go down in the attempt. But I don't disagree with you. I think the whole thing was a little forced.
It just felt off. And Osha was somebody I was so looking forward to seeing again. Natalia Tenya, the actor, she's also Tonks in Harry Potter. So I don't know, there's this part of me, it's like, come on, Tonks, do it. But, she ended poorly. And what a horrible way to die. What a horrible goddamn way to die.
Yeah. Nobody has a good ending in this thing.
We always go back to Ramsay. I always go back to Ramsay's little, sentence of, if you think this has a happy ending, you have not been paying attention.
Yeah. It's never peacefully in bed for these people.
No,
it isn't. The last note I was going to make is that I'm just really excited about what's to come. I think they've been setting up some storylines with great anticipation. The Arya story is about to get more interesting. Yeah. You know, she's sort of back in the game. The prospect of the battle at Winterfell, as you've been saying, but not just a battle, but maybe with the wildlings involved, maybe 1-1. Storming the walls at Winterfell, that could be awesome.
Does the show have mammoths?
I don't know, but it would be awesome. Really maybe the best episode in the history of this show, the Night's King. He's out there somewhere.
Yes.
And we haven't even really thought about him now in five or six episodes, but he's out there.
Yes, he is. And that's I was actually going to bring this up as well, is that we have this. Throughout this entire series, that's been the beauty of the way that the show, the entire series has played itself out is, all this is going on in Westeros, but the entire time there is this impending threat hanging out just north of the wall that is not only really, really scary, but it's really, really fucking cool. And I cannot wait to get a little bit more of that because the Night's King, and he's got a whole new bit of army with all the dead wildlings after Hardhome, right? So... that's still lingering. That's still out there. And I cannot wait to see how that's going to play itself out and how it's going to eventually roll through Westeros in one way or the other. I don't know. For some reason, I can get this bizarre vision in my head of Cersei having run away from a white, and it just really excites me.
One way or another, it's going to be epic.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was fantastic. Thank you very much. I think we pretty much covered everything we needed to cover about this episode.
Agreed.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we're going to come back about some news about Game of Thrones. Okay, welcome back, and it's now time to chat about some news that came out this week about Game of Thrones. David, take it away.
This is a good one.
Yeah, it is.
So, this is from comicbookresources.com, and the headline reads, Kit Harington revealed Jon Snow's fate to avoid a speeding ticket. That's a pretty good headline.
It really is.
Game of Thrones producers and stars insisted for months that Jon Snow was dead following the brutal events of the Season 5 finale. Although star Kit Harington was sworn to secrecy about his character's fate, he of course told his parents and his girlfriend, Game of Thrones alum Rose Leslie, and maybe a few other trusted people. But other than that, he told no one. Well, except for that one police officer. Appearing Friday on The Tonight Show, Harrington revealed that he was pulled over for speeding by a cop who just happened to be a Game of Thrones fan. He said, look, there are two ways we can do this. You can either follow me back to the police station now and I book you in, or you can tell me whether you live on the next series of Game of Thrones. The actor conceded he laughed, but quickly realized the officer wasn't joking. He said, I have to tell you, you know nothing. No, just kidding. I have to tell you, whether I take you into the police station depends on what your answer is, Harrington recalled. So I looked at him and went, I'm alive next season. And he says, mm-hmm. On your way, Lord Commander. Keep the speed down this far south of the wall.
Yeah, that just killed me. When I heard that, awesome. I thought it was the funniest thing. I mean, I don't know. It's just pretty cool that you're a cop and you're able to pull that off. That's just, I don't know. I guess as far as abuses of power go, that's about the least one. I don't really think that's too much of an issue. So one cop got so
maybe
lucky.
Maybe not technically legal in the strictest sense of the word, but pretty funny.
That was hilarious. I loved it. Well, thank you very much. That is the only news item. Again, I've been saying one thing this season I've noticed. I think HBO has really done a great job of kind of keeping the lid on any sort of spoilers or anything that's going to come out about the show. They've been much tighter about any information. So our news sections have been woefully anemic. But in so many ways, that just makes me happy. Good. I don't want to know all this stuff.
Agreed.
And if you look over there, you see that coming? I see some ravens. Looks like we got some mail. So we got a bunch of feedback from listeners on our Facebook page. Go check that out. Game of Microphones. David, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Kristen Hallberg writes, holy crap on my face. Here we are saying Dany has dragons. The dragons are going to save her. She's the mother of dragons. We seem to have forgotten she is the fucking unburnt. I did not see that coming. Totally radical.
Neither.
Finally, John was shocked into action. Come and see. That's Ramsay. And telling John he's a bastard? Motherfucker, Robb Stark not only legitimized his ass, but named him Lord if he were to die. You come and see, Ramsay. Prepare to be the flayed man. Die, Ramsay, die. Oh, and did everyone else lose control of their face when Sansa and Jon were reunited? Because I lost control of my face.
I think she was saying D, Ramsay, D. The Ramsay, the. I think that's what she
maybe.
Was saying. All right, next one is from Katie Siebert. Love this episode. One of my favorites of all time. So happy to see Jon and Sansa reunited. Their scenes together were wonderful. I shouted out loud with happiness when the gate first opened. Looking forward to next week. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work.
Chio Paris says, finally, something exciting with the Dany storyline. I was getting kind of bored, but this made up for it. I wonder what Cersei's endgame is in regard to Margaery's atonement and Tormund and Brienne. Do I hear wedding bells? Is she his real life bear?
Love it. Wendy Ott Eppers says, wow, incredible episode. It was so, so satisfying to finally have a Stark reunion. Jon is reunited with a stronger, fiery Sansa. I loved Osha's line to Ramsay. You eat them after? Oh, that was a good line. It will take more than that to scare Osha, Ramsay. Her death just gets more people on the Ramsay must die train. Our favorite Lannister twins finally getting their acts together and throwing in with Lady Olenna. I can't wait to see the show they will put on. I thought Jorah, Daria, and the call convention was a little slow, but boy, did it ever pay off in spades. Incredible ending. There is that Dany we all love, unburnt. Favorite moment of the episode? Tormund giving Brienne the eyes. A budding romance.
Everybody loves it, man.
Hell yeah.
Matt Whitehurst says, giving the slave owner 7 years to end it is way too long, in my opinion. Maybe agreed. 6 to 12 months. I have a feeling that Grey Worm is right about the slave owners. Grey Worm might be right about the slave owners, but I'm going to say I trust my man Tyrion. Tyrion's pretty clever. I think he knows what he's doing.
I gotta agree. I thought 7 years was too long. 3 years? That could have been more reasonable. But,
Yeah, I think the 7 years made me feel like Tyrion's just buying time. He's just trying to get them off their neck until till they can pull off whatever they're going to pull off. Matt also says, glad to see two of the Stark kids reunited. That threat letter from Ramsay was creepy. Yes, it was. I thought that Sansa would burn it after reading it. Speaking of burning, that ending was hot. A sign of rebirth.
And Olivia Deck says, I'm on the Brienne and Tormund ship. They would have the most badass warrior babies Westeros has ever had or ever seen. Excuse me. Har. And thank you guys so much. Actually, we had to cut back a lot of the Facebook comments. We did get a ton. We loved them. Thank you so much. However, there's some repetition going on. And basically the repetition was die Ramsay, yay Jon Snow and Sansa. And we all want Brienne and Tormund to get it on. So, that is basically all the Facebook ones. Thank you, Olivia. Now we move on to a couple of emails here. So take away the first one.
Okay, this one's from Stephanie Clark. And Stephanie says, hi, Game of Microphones friends. Hi, Stephanie. Hi. I have binge listened to your podcast this week and I'm finally caught up. Good, we love that. This last episode was awesome. Seeing Sansa and Jon reunite and then disagree and then agree to take back the North. What? I love that Sansa has learned the game and I feel she's teaching Jon how to play. Tyrion is always genius and knows how to make the slave masters happy as well as making the slaves happy. I adore Dany's scene when she talks to the Dosh Kalin and befriends one of the girls. I loved when she grabbed the fire pit and killed the leaders. My favorite part is Brienne. She doesn't have a big story this episode, but as soon as you see her, she commands the screen. Gwendolyn Christie is brilliant. She doesn't have to do much to show how strong and confident she is. Love the show. Love, love, love the podcast. I can't wait to hear more. Stephanie Lynn.
Oh, you left out the throbbing throner forever. I loved that.
Well, now it's in.
You cleaned it up a bit. I saw that. That was very nice. Brazier. That's the name of those things. For some reason, when she was talking about it, it popped into my head.
Yes.
B-R-A-Z-E-I-E-R. That's it. It popped into my head. I was like, that's the name of those things, is braziers. Yes.
And none of us are ever going to look at any of those things the same again.
Never. No, never. Although I don't think we have too many of those in our daily life anymore. But depending on where you live, maybe where you're living, you have some of those. And really, get the hell out of the medieval times. Come to the modern world. That's all I'm saying. Okay, our next email is from Andrea James. Greetings, fellow Throners. What a fucking majestic episode. I can't wait to hear you guys break it down. This season hasn't missed a beat. I'm riveted and the wait for the next episode has become agonizing, to say the least. Longtime listener of the show, and while I do miss Jason and Karen, kudos to Mr. Blog and the rotating crew for holding it down with style. Well, thank you. Fucking love you guys. Thank you very much, and you'll get a taste of Jason here in 2 weeks. 1. The gates at Castle Black open to reveal Brienne and Sansa. At long motherfucking last, some Starks reunite and it feels so good. I'm really digging the evolution of Sansa and she's quickly becoming a favorite. She reminds me of Carol's arc in The Walking Dead. At first, such weak and unlikable characters who become badass chicks you couldn't imagine not having on your side. 2. Because I'm desperately clinging to your guys' theory of the North remembers, it came as a total shock when Ramsay offs another one of my favorites. Agreed. OSHA. Son of a bitch, Ramsay. Even though it felt too good to be true, I still held hope that this might be his end. But that was not to be. Farewell, OSHA. You will be missed. 3. Khaleesi, Khaleesi, Khaleesi! I mean, she's the motherfucking mother of dragons for a motherfucking reason. Talk about leaping off the couch and cheering like I actually was there. Can't wait until she rides the Drogon to claim the Iron Throne. The look of shock on the faces of the calls as they roast it all around her. Amazing and oh, so satisfying. Honorable mentions. Littlefinger scurries out of whatever hole he was hiding in with an army that Sansa, Jon, and the wildlings badly need. I rarely find myself rooting for the actions of Littlefinger, but this time, he just might help save the North.
Don't trust him.
I know, it's so hard to, isn't it? Queen Marjorie grows a spine while her brother falls apart. Hang on, you guys. Help is on the way in the most curious of ways. How long will this delicate alliance hold together? Will the siblings make it long enough to be rescued? So many questions. Okay, well, don't get bit, you guys. Wait, that's not right. Okay. Don't touch Jorah's scale arm.
That's a great sign-off.
That is a great sign-off. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I lost the name here. Andrea, thank you very much, Andrea. Appreciate that. Whew. Well, thank you all for that. We did get a voicemail from Laura Willie Swink. So take it away, Laura.
Hi there. This is Laura calling about this week's Game of Thrones. Well, Entertainment Weekly said that season 6 is the rise of the Game of Thrones women, and I thought that this was the episode with the ladies on top. First off, though, the Stark family reunion had me cheering. Finally, I think this is the first time any of the Stark siblings have got to see each other again since season 1.
Yeah.
But here is for the ladies. Sansa, Jon wants to run and hide? Really? After coming back to life, he just wants to go run and hide in some hole somewhere and take Sansa with him? It takes baby sister Sansa to set him straight and tell him that they need to go back home to Winterfell and take their home back. Yay, Sansa! Brienne, I wanted to give that girl a high five after she admitted to Davos that she was the one who executed Stannis. And her side eye to Melisandre was ice cold. It was so wonderful. She's getting a little bit of redemption after all she's had to put up with. Marjorie, she has to be the one to go in and tell Loras where his place in the family is. She has to be the strong one when he's breaking down and telling her that he just wants it to be over. And then we go to the small council, and as Tyrion brings up, we make peace with our enemies, not our friends. And I thought that's exactly what Lady Olenna and Cersei were doing, putting aside their petty differences and hatred for each other to unify against the Faith Militant. Finally, Daenerys! Why does everyone continue to underestimate this woman? Jorah and Dario show up and come to save their damsel in distress, and Dany just gives them the hand and says, step down, boys. I got this. All she needed was a bucket of pig's blood to complete that Cary White revenge scene. It was so marvelous. And Emilia Clarke is amazing. Standing there in her birthday suit, she should have felt her most vulnerable, but she looked every bit the regal conqueror. You go, girl. Last thought, rather than an endgame being one ruler on the Iron Throne, could it be that there's going to be a triumvirate or the three-headed dragon? With Dany as the conqueror, Jon as the hand of justice, and Tyrion as the political diplomat? That's my theory. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Can't wait to hear it.
Well, thank you very much, Laura. Really appreciated that. And, you know, I got to say, I have heard her name so much over the years with Walking Dead, and for some reason, I don't feel like I never heard her voice. So thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, great call. Good observations. I like that theory. That's not one that I have heard before.
No,
Among all the theories that I've heard, and it's definitely three of the favorite characters that you have, and those really are their attributes. So, interesting take. The one question I would have is, what are the chances of? So, there's going to be a big battle at Winterfell. Then there's going to be the knockdown dragout battle with. The Night's King and his cohort, and don't forget the Lannisters are still running around.
Yeah.
What are the chances that all three of them survive all of that? That would be one question.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, good question, but I really have no idea. One thing she also brought up, Dany in her birthday suit. This actually should have been a news, I think, because it has been well known that since season 3, Emilia Clarke has had it in her contract that she does not have to go nude anymore. But she spoke out, I think it was with Entertainment Weekly. I saw some articles today.
Yes, it was.
That she was very proud to do this scene. Because honestly, I was watching it last night, knowing the contract about it, and I'm thinking, might be a body double. The same thing they did with Lena Headey, you know. No, that was her. And she was very proud of that because of the fact that she felt it was an extremely empowering moment. That was powerful enough for her to justify doing that. And she did that completely of her own agency. And I thought that was really cool. I thought it was great. It made for an extraordinarily impactful scene, and a callback, very much a callback to the end of season one.
Yes. And it was interesting, to find that they shot that scene in two different places, the very last part, so it could be more private for her, was in a different location.
Oh, I missed that part of it. Really?
Yeah, cool. I want to say Ireland, the second part, and the first part was shot in out in the desert where all of or most of the Dothraki scenes have been shot. Hmm. So they had to weave those two scenes together, but they did a really good job of it.
They did a great job, and it was, you know, the use of nudity on this show is certainly well known, but I do love it when it is used for a completely 100% non-sexual way. This was just about this person being empowered. Clothes are all burnt off because she just came out of a fire. Somehow her hair is still fireproof, which I always find fascinating. But that was great. I thought it was phenomenal scene. So thank you, Laura. That was a wonderful voicemail. Really appreciated that. David, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's coming up next week on Game of Thrones?
Next week on Game of Thrones, season 6, episode 5, The Door. Written by series co-creators David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and directed by Jack Bender, who has directed episodes for lots of TV shows, including Lost, The Sopranos, Under the Dome, and many others. Wow, that's quite a resume.
Well, he is, like, when you saw a Lost episode directed by Jack Bender, you knew it was a good one. He's great.
Synopsis. Tyrion seeks a strange ally. Bran learns a great deal. Brienne goes on a mission. Arya is given a chance to prove herself.
Oh, so, those are so wonderfully vague.
They are. They're very vague. It could almost describe any episode as usual.
Did you see the previews for next week?
I have not seen the preview. I try to avoid them, honestly. That's just my own little thing that I love to go into it as clean as possible, not guessing about the little snippet they've shown us. But when they say Bran learns a great deal, I felt like we were about to learn about Ned and the whole history. And yeah. So, you know, is that where that's going? And then,
so that was one of the things in the preview. I'm not going to say what it is. But Bran learns. Well, let's say that somebody I'm trying to find a way.
You can't say it.
Well, I'm trying to respect the fact that you're trying to go in as clean as possible, but never mind. It's not the Tower of Joy. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm excited for next week.
Yeah, it's a good little teaser, and that's what these are meant to be.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much. You ready to close out the show?
Let's do it.
Okay. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY. And now, there's finally a real voicemail message, so it doesn't just say that the caller you're trying to reach is not available. It is actually me saying, hey, Throners, thank you for calling, blah, blah, blah.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you'd like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
And be sure to check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/GOM podcast, or just search for Game of Microphones on Facebook. That is the place where, I really enjoy interacting with everybody. I'm sure Jason will interact with folks as well when he is host, but I'll probably still pop up there because Facebook's a fun place to chat with people. That's all.
Yes, it is. It's pretty popular, so I've heard. And be sure to check out the other great podcasts in our growing network at podcastica.com.
Join us next week for Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 5, The Door, with me and, well, we're not 100% sure who the next host co-host is going to be, so stay tuned for that. We'll let you know as the week approaches. But until then, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.